This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. So let's say you're charged with a crime. The police are interrogating you. I mean, for a long time they're interrogating you, and you haven't had any sleep. There is a new study which indicates you might falsely confess because you're sleep deprived. That study was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, and one of the authors joins us now. Kim Finn is an associate professor of psychology at Michigan State University. So you and your co-authors wrote an article for The Conversation about this study, and you noted false confessions are a factor in about 25% of DNA exonerations in the U.S. Why would anybody confess to something they didn't do?
I think it's really difficult for anyone to believe that this could actually happen, but it happens with alarming frequency. And in fact, we don't even know how often it happens. In response to your question, I'm not sure that I know why people do this. What we do know is that a lot of times these confessions occur, as you said, after lengthy interrogations, and sometimes even with coercive police interrogation tactics.
Your study found sleep-deprived subjects would confess more often than those who had adequate sleep in the experiment you ran. Tell me about how you set up that.
Our participants all came in for an initial session, and during that session, we warned them that they were not permitted to hit a certain key on the keyboard, in this case, the escape key. And this is modeled after other research that has looked at false confessions in an experimental laboratory. Now, importantly, the escape key on a standard PC keyboard is very far from the other keys, so it's unlikely that they would have accidentally hit the key. So it's not like the caps lock key that you would just, you know, often potentially hit by accident.
Right.
So we warn them that they should not touch this key. Then we tell them that it will cause us to lose valuable research data. We then brought them back to the laboratory approximately 1 week later. And at that time, we told them that they would either be able to sleep for a night in our laboratory, we have two bedrooms here, or that they would be required to stay awake for the entire night. So again, that night, we warned them of our escape key problem, and then we told them which condition they would be. And so then they either went to sleep, and we set them up with full polysomnography, so we were able to trace their sleep throughout the night, so we know that they actually did sleep and for how long they slept and that sort of thing. And then the other participants remained awake in the laboratory. They were monitored by two research staff who had napped during the day, so they were a little bit less sleepy than the participants. And then the critical element of the study is on the following morning, after which half of participants had stayed awake for the entire night and half had slept, we accused them of hitting this escape key in their first session in the laboratory.
You lied to them.
We did lie to them.
So what was the difference in the confessions between those who had enough sleep and those who didn't?
Yeah, the difference was quite alarming. Of the participants who slept throughout the night, about 18% of them confessed to our allegation. However, in the sleep-deprived conditions, that number went up to 50%. So a full half of the participants agreed that they had done this thing that they did not
talk
do.
I want to talk about a flaw or a weakness in your experiment that I read about in Scientific Method. Mm-hmm. They said the participants didn't face any penalty for signing the confessions. What do you think about that criticism?
I think that's an absolutely valid criticism, actually. I mean, this is actually one of the steps that we're going to take next. Obviously, in a real confession, if you confess to a murder or a double murder, as has been done, inherently you know that something could potentially happen to you. And here, there were no consequences. So I do agree that that's absolutely a weakness of the study.
So how do you think, based on what you've learned here, how do you think this plays out in the real world where law enforcement is working to get a suspect to confess to a crime?
Mm-hmm. I think it could have potentially really dire consequences in that there's a lot of research and a lot of literature to suggest that in a sleep-deprived state, individuals have impaired cognitive ability across a range of tasks, importantly including things like decision-making. There's also substantial evidence that certain areas of the brain that are critical to executive function and decision-making, and importantly the frontal lobes, show reduced activation during sleep deprivation. What you're essentially doing is taking a person who is not at the peak or, in fact, is impaired in their cognitive processing, and you can put them in a state in which these sorts of false confessions may be much more likely to occur.
The next step, what needs to be done to verify that sleep deprivation might contribute to false confessions?
There's a lot to be done. I mean, quite honestly, this is just the first step in what should be a long line of research. one of the very important things that needs to be done is to impose some consequences. So let people know that if they falsely confess to this thing, or that if they confess to this thing, this behavior, whatever it is, that something bad will happen to them. And I think another interesting thing that we need to do is to look at the difference between the effect of sleep deprivation on false confessions and also on true confessions. It's unknown whether or not sleep deprivation makes people more or even less likely to confess to something that they've actually done or a crime they've actually committed.
Kimberly Finn is co-author of a study that suggests sleep deprivation can lead to false confessions. It was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.